Hello and welcome back to another episode of Battle Red Radio. I'm your host, Colt Molesky, and I'm joined by Corey DLG, my co-host and producer, Nico. We have a lot to get to today, plenty to talk about. I can't believe that we are already getting ready for Thanksgiving games. Where did the season go, guys?
Well, for us, mostly the toilet. It hasn't really been a great year, but it has gone by remarkably quick, or perhaps mercifully quick, or perhaps gently quickly.
I think mercifully quick is probably the one.
I mean,
I think it's a mercy that it's fly by.
Any sort of kind adjective you could put in front of a fast word pretty much describes how the season's gone so far for us, time-wise.
It has flown by, though, and now we're getting ready for Thanksgiving games. We've got all the teams playing. It's going to be a great weekend of football. If you enjoy football in general, it'll be maybe not so much for the Texans, but before they get to the game, Corey, it sounds like they have some decisions to make. I know that let's play this out from the last couple of days, because over the last few days, a lot has happened. You have the weird press conference after the game from Lovie Smith. I want to get to that first before we touch on the potential quarterback change. I don't know. We'll get into that in a second. But first, you have Lovie Smith coming out and talking about after the game. He said that they need to put a better product on the field. And then one of the reporters asked him, why weren't you able to do that? And he said he didn't want to that week, essentially. I'm paraphrasing there, but that's essentially what he says. He didn't want to this game. Is that weird? Is that tank adjacent? What does that even mean?
So I think it was sarcastic. I don't know Lovie Smith at all as a human being. I've never even been within 100 yards of him that I know of. I don't know anything about him as a person. He appears to be always calm and very dry in his delivery of things. And I think, listen, every NFL head coach genuinely appears to hate answering questions from the media. It seems to be one step below cleaning the restrooms, like on the list of things that is their responsibility. Like, they're like, after I do everything else, I guess I'll talk to the media. I really don't want to. And I think that's a little bit of a mistake tactically. I think the coaches who are friendlier with the media probably have an easier time. The coach in Miami, who kind of jokes with the media, I feel like when they hit a hard run of games, I bet the media is a little nicer to him because he hasn't been so adversarial with them. I think Lovie Smith, though, has just been a little dry. I think that's all it was. Organizationally, I believe the Texans want to lose right now. I do believe that. However, I don't believe they're telling Lovie Smith, lose us games. I just believe that they know their roster isn't talented enough to really win games. And a lot of our games are sort of playing out like college football games right now, where the 5A school is visiting the team that pays them $1 million. You know what I mean? Like when Alabama plays, you know, 2A, Appalachian State. And when they're playing Appalachian State, for the first half, it's only like a 7-3 game, and everyone's like, man, Alabama's really struggling here. But all they're really trying to do is just figure the other team out, figure out where they're putting their guys defensively, where they're putting them offensively. And then in the third quarter, Alabama explodes for 40 points, benches their starters, and Appalachian State's looking around going, what happened? That's kind of what's happening to the Texans, is our team isn't good enough on the field to win these games. They're good enough to stay competitive through these games. And so I think he's frustrated. I don't think any head coach ever wants to be 1-8-1. So I think at the press conference when they were asked, why didn't you put the better product on the field? What Lovie Smith was doing was going up there and saying, listen, I'm struggling right now because the team's not great and I don't know what else to do to make us better right now. And the press's response was, well, why didn't you make us better? And so I think he was frustrated. I think that was all that kind of really was.
Would it be the stuff with Miami kind of casts a different light on this, but would it be the worst thing in the world for a coach to just say, hey, you know what? We're bad. And right now it's about evaluating the young guys, not about winning and getting the first pick. They're still have a a lock on the first overall pick right now do the Houston Texans. Getting the first pick and figuring out who the quarterback is, or figuring just getting in new talent is really important, and figuring out the talent we have is really important. Is that the worst thing in the world? I know that coaches get fined for this type of thing, but also you talk about that honesty and that transparency that maybe is helpful when you're managing a poor situation. Is it the worst thing in the world to be less cryptic and more honest?
It's a tough kind of needle to thread there. You really got to kind of navigate it, particularly because there's going to be a lot of questions, because Lovie Smith was in charge of helping cut players and make final roster decisions and things of that nature. So there's going to be a lot of if I mean, we're in week 12, right? So like we're coming into week 12. If at week 12, so not much past halfway in the season, you're already going, listen, we're here to evaluate the young guys. The rest of the season doesn't matter. It is what it is. There's a lot of people who've paid a lot of money to come watch the Texans play. There's a lot of people who are spending a lot of money in the stadium to watch the Texans play. There's a lot of people who, you know, this season will determine if they watch next season or if they're a fan next season, that kind of thing. And for those people, it almost doesn't matter. It's a really hard way to deliver that in a way that means anything. Now, listen, if it's week 15 and you're like, look, we're out of the playoffs, we're basically a lock for the number one pick, we're going to go out there and compete and see who wants to perform and see if we can, you know, spoil someone's day these last couple weeks, I feel like that's a different thing. But this early in a season, this is a speech he could have given week two, you know? But nobody, I mean, realistically, they were never competing for anything. You and I, when we were forecasting the season, weren't like, hey, we got a puncher's chance, you know? I said the division was going to be a mess, but I still didn't like our chances. But weirdly enough, I think four, we were still in the middle of everything. And I was like, well, I guess if we keep winning, but obviously that didn't happen. So I don't, you would like some honesty. You can't have too much. And partly that thing in Miami does kind of make it impossible, because if you are accidentally honest in this situation, you could potentially cost the NFL and some of these teams a lot of money and draft picks and things of that nature, because part of this whole thing is everyone is in this together and everyone's agreeing to be competitive. It's not quite like the NBA where some of the owners are okay with the idea of some teams being bad on purpose.
Yeah, and I mean,
the owners would probably be more
bad. Well, the NBA made steps to try and curb that too, right? And so, like, clearly not everybody was on board. And I'm not saying he should come out and just be like, guess what? We want to lose. Losing is better. We're tanking this season. But maybe just going out there and saying, hey, you know what? The best product we can put on the field is
a losing one?
Is evaluating those young guys and is seeing how good those young guys can be. That said, I mean, it's not like in that last game they were getting Damian Pierce the ball a ton. It's it did feel like that game was kind of in cruise control for a large part for both of those teams, honestly.
Well, his average was terrible. I mean, that was a problem. I don't think he crossed the line of scrimmage in about half of the run plays. So I think they gave up running the ball simply because they weren't running the ball. It was rough. It was a rough game. We got outmatched and Kenyon Green and Laremy Tunsil looked like they forgot how to play football for a game, honestly. The pressure was coming from everywhere. Sometimes they would put six guys on the line, and I was watching, and I was going, oh, I don't know. I'm not sure where the pressure's going to come from on this play. And then only four guys would rush, and somehow we would lose one of them. And, like, Davis Mills has a second and a half to throw. And I was like, well, that was bad. It was a rough game preparation-wise for the Texans, which is odd because I don't think the Commanders do a lot that's all that exotic. I think they just kind of overpower you.
Well, and speaking of Davis Mills, that brings us to later in the week, coming off of Sunday, where now all of a sudden we have conversations about maybe a potential quarterback change swirling around this team. Now, I don't know if you guys have done any research or you listeners have done any research out there on who the backup is for the Texans, but that would mean throwing in Kyle Allen, into the starting role. Is what can you honestly expect from Kyle Allen that would be different from Davis Mills?
Well, he's got a different set of skills, quarterback wise, where Davis Mills seems to excel throwing down the seam and 20 yards downfield. That seems to be Davis Mills' strengths, and Davis Mills' weaknesses seem to be those short outlet throws, those ones between the hash marks and the sidelines within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. He really struggles in those two cubes, those two rectangles there. Kyle Allen is sort of, I don't recall him having the strongest arm, but I do recall him being a quick decision maker and efficient with where he put it. So he should be able to hit those throws to those outsides a little bit better. But I think the problem is size-wise, he's a little bit smaller than Davis Mills. Davis Mills, even though he's not athletic by any measure, you know, he did actually, you know, come out of the pocket once or twice in this Commanders game. I think people have been in his ear to do that a little bit more. I think Kyle Allen probably has that particular club in his golf bag. He can come out of the pocket a little bit, which maybe does help us a little bit, but I don't remember the ceiling on him. Like, I don't remember anyone ever saying, like, Kyle Allen has potential to be the guy. You know what I mean? And so if Davis Mills beat him in camp, then I think this is about as good as it gets.
Well, and I don't think that they're looking for Kyle Allen to be the guy either. I think the guy is in the 2023 draft, right? But we do have this clear kind of change in attitude from the week before, Lovie Smith saying that it's not time to consider making a quarterback change, to now after you have 5 first half yards in a game against the Commanders. Oof. Now maybe you're going into this week saying maybe we give the other guy some reps, take a look at him, and see if he can do anything different just to get some life in this offense a little bit. I don't think that there's any scenario where they come out of this next game against the Dolphins and say, you know what, maybe we accidentally found our quarterback of the future on the roster. I don't think that's going to happen. But it looks like they might just be trying to inject some sort of life into that offense. For Kyle Allen's stats for his career, he averages over 4 seasons. He played on the Carolina Panthers and Washington. He has averaged over his career a 63.1% completion rate. He has had 4,300 yards, 24 touchdowns, 17 interceptions. His yard after catch average is 10.9. His yard per attempt is 6.9. I don't know. It's he's a career backup, and he's taken over for a guy in Davis Mills who will likely be a career backup. I feel like I'm just being honest, expecting too much of anything other than maybe what you saw from other games. What you got from Davis Mills in games like, I don't know, the game against the Colts or the game against maybe the Giants, stuff like that. I feel like that's probably what you're going to get from Kyle Allen, because it's 2 backups who are getting thrust, potentially in Kyle Allen's case, into starting roles. I don't see much of any difference. Maybe you're just trying to shake the snow globe a little bit to get a little different result, but it's going to be relatively the same, I think.
Yeah, I honestly, you know, so part of all these conversations that have been happening, you know, the receiving corps is not good. You know, Nico Collins is worse this year than he was last year, I feel like. Brandon Cooks is massively underperforming even before the temper tantrum. We're getting nothing out of the tight end position. So I don't know.
Chris Moore is at best a third receiver.
A third receiver, yeah, on like 6 of the worst teams in the NFL, and that's about it. I don't know. There's no quick answer. That's the honesty. Is what Lovie Smith probably should have said at the press conference is, why did you put a better product on the field? Is right now all I can do is keep moving the deck chairs around. Okay, like, you want to see Kyle Allen? I'll show you Kyle Allen for a couple games. You're not going to be any happier with the results though, and part of that is because these receivers aren't doing anybody any favors. There were a couple plays where some guys were making business decisions on the field already, where they were looking for where the hit's coming from instead of just catching the ball or just making the tackles, you know? So it's starting to creep in. The losing is starting to show on the field. And I think that that's probably the hardest part of Lovie Smith's job, is to keep this team motivated so that we can keep properly evaluating and keeping everybody healthy. Because when teams are playing spirited and at full speed, people get hurt less. If you start trying to pull up short and not get hurt, that's when you get hurt in the NFL, at least according to players. I've never played. I don't know. But every player in the world will tell you, if you don't mean to be out there, don't be out there. So I don't.
Well, and that's the thing, though, that we knew coming into this season was keeping the same intensity throughout 18 weeks, right? Because we knew this team wasn't going to be awesome, even in the summer. We knew this team wasn't going to be awesome, and we knew there was going to be a lot of losses on the schedule. And so that was going to be the struggle. We're at the point where now it starts to be, you're not staying competitive in these games. You're not really pushing a team to put you away in the fourth quarter. These games are done in the first half.
Right.
And so that's when this is the hardest part of Lovie Smith's job, this next month of grinding through these games where they're not really in these games is going to be tough.
This is where you're stuck, right? Because there is no good answer for it. There's not like, yeah, you guys have lost, I think, what, 6 in a row? Because we were, what, 1-2-1? So now we've lost 6 in a row, and we're staring down the barrel of, you know, 7 more really tough games. There's no good answers. You better be up and ready for that Dallas game, or the city of Houston will eat you alive. That might be the one pothole that could cost Lovie Smith his job. If they go out and lay an egg on some sort of, I don't know if that game is primetime or not. I hope to God it's not at this point.
No, that's a new game.
Thank God.
They are locked into noon games until the Colts Texans game at the end of the year, which is still a to be determined time.
Okay.
But they are locked into new games the rest of the
year.
Thank
God. If that is a game that is out of hand by middle first quarter, you know, if we go 3-and-out 4 times or something, and they put up 2 touchdowns and a field goal, and we're staring 17-0 in the face, like with 5 minutes left in the first quarter or something, I could easily see, like, the press conference being the last time we see Lovie Smith with Texans logos behind him.
I don't know. The Dallas Cowboys just dunked on an 8-1
team.
That is
irrelevant. The Dallas Cowboys are very up down.
To make them 8-2.
Yeah, I know, right? But that's the thing. They're very up down, the Cowboys. And it's really the only kind of game that matters. Honestly, we've already said it on here. Nico and I have said it already multiple times. That's the last game. That the Deshaun Watson game are the only 2 games that matter on the schedule anymore. But
you just said it. The lack of talent on this
roster.
Matter. People want to put blame somewhere. I would not put blame at the feet of Lovie Smith or Hamilton for any of this stuff. Like, what are you supposed to scheme up when you have such a talent deficient offense and you're having such trouble creating explosive plays? And there are games where it does look like the offensive line that showed up against the Commanders is going to get absolutely torched by the defensive line of the Dallas team that showed up against the Vikings.
No,
it's going to be a disaster.
You're right. Now, here's the thing, though. You've got to find a way to get the offensive line that showed up against, you know, a couple of these other teams where you know, Damian Pierce had 120 yards or whatever it was, you know? You got to get him to show up for those games where he was averaging 6 yards a carry. You got to re-motivate him. Because you're right. If what happened last week happens in those games, it's going to be real, real bad. In the Browns game, too. Those are the only 2 games that matter. You've got to go out there and maybe not win, but you've got to really lay out some good tape on those 2 games. Because those are going to be the 2 games the fandom is paying attention to. I think everyone on some level acknowledges that we're not going to keep winning, you know. But those are 2 games that are just too important to the core of what is a Houston Texan to let the Commanders game be the result for those games.
I think that if you're the Texans, the only reason that you start Kyle Allen is if you think it gives you a better shot to get an idea of how this offensive line, some of these young offensive line pieces look, or if you think it gives you a better idea of how Damian Pierce looks in some of these games, that's the only reason to switch it up. Because I think this is just one of those, you know how you have the burn the tapes games?
Yeah.
I think this is a burn the tape season.
No, I don't want to go that far because there's a lot in the games that's been good. We've been complimentary about a lot of stuff because there's a lot of good stuff to get out of it. Once you accept that this isn't a good season for results, like win losses, the development of Stingley Jr. has been great. Petre has been slipping the last couple weeks, but I think that that's simply because defenses have now accepted that he's not a normal rookie, and now they're challenging him with harder choices on the field. Damian Pierce, you know, he can only go as far as guys like Kenyon Green and Laremy Tunsil are willing to block for him. But on the good days, he fights and gets you the extra yard and a half. So, you know, there are highlights to this that are still worth watching and talking about. I think it's a burn the record year. I don't know that I would burn all the film. I think there's plenty of good tape. There's also plenty of tape that kind of Exhibit A and Exhibit B is kind of a lot of stuff. You know, Brandon Cook, isn't he guaranteed, what, $18 million next year? Is that correct? Am I wrong?
Yeah.
He's guaranteed $18 million next year. I think it's still justified cutting him and just giving him the money to not be here. Here's your check. Go be a crybaby somewhere else.
I think the season confirmed a lot of what we knew before.
That's probably a better way to put it. Yeah.
Like I didn't. I know that the hype was high, and so in hindsight is 2020. But I'm serious. If you watched him in Florida, you knew Damian Pierce was going to be good. This is just confirming it. We knew Damian Pierce was going to be good. Derek Stingley Jr., I get he's had some lumps. He's had the missed tackles. But Derek Stingley Jr. is good. Jalen Petrie, he was good in college and is just confirming what people, you could say, were hoping for or people suspected beforehand, but it was just confirming stuff. And so, it's just get the season through, get to the draft. That's the focus for this year. And I'm not firing Lovie Smith if they get blown out by the Cowboys. I get what you're saying about
that's going to be the hardest
Houston
one.
And the pride
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, that's going to be the hardest one to defend to the fandom and to everybody else. If they lose that game, that's going to be the one where the most pressure is on ownership. You know, where the gallery furnitures and the other sponsors are really leaning on them to go, hey man, like you're letting Houston down here. I don't know that it's automatic. I do think it would be hard for him to. He'd have to really kind of do some solid lip service to get out of losing that one.
And if I was Lovie Smith, I'd say, hey, look at what other Houston teams have done. Look at after bad performances when you bring in and then you let a coach hang around, and all of a sudden you bring in like a Matt Schaub and Arian Foster, and then you turn that around, or then the team takes a nosedive and a couple drafts happen. You're bringing guys like Deshaun Watson and all of a sudden they're in the playoffs again.
No, I totally agree.
Give me a couple of drafts to stack up the talent. Houston has done this before. And if you leave the coach in and the system in, I'm sure that they could do it again.
No, and I'm with you on that. I do think, and I think Lovie Smith is just worlds better than David Culley was. And I think that's why they made the change. You know, David Culley just had so many. You would leave games not only losing, but you would leave games questioning coaching decisions. Now, I mean personnel wise, I mean literally like in game. Why did we decline this penalty? Why did we take that one? Why are we kicking a field goal here? Why did we punt to then fake punt? You know what I mean? Like he would just do things where you were in game going, what did we just do? And Lovie Smith hasn't had that. There's been one time that I really kind of circled. Where, and it was very just, it's mechanically wrong, but it was what it was. It was second down with a minute to go. I think this is 2 weeks ago. And the offense just walks off the field and the field goal unit walks on the field. And it takes a solid 38 seconds for them to kick the field goal. It didn't matter. We were down. We were down 10. We needed the field goal. We needed the onside kick to recover and to score the touchdown. We were 35 yards out, and we just left the clock running while we swapped units. And that was the only time where I was like, okay, well, spike the ball. Still have 40-plus seconds left. Kick the field goal. And then, you know, at least pretend like you have a shot at winning the game. You know what I mean? But other than that one time, Lovie Smith has been in-game mechanically sound as far as what he's doing with the clock. So in that regard, I think he is a better coach to lead a rebuild through its completion.
Nico, is there any point in this season that would make you want to fire Lovie Smith?
Not really, other than him, his rather weak responses to the media have not painted him to be very confident. Like when people are like, hey, why does our offense sucks? And he just goes, I don't know.
Yeah, it's not a helpful answer, right? Like, that's not going to get you any fans.
Yeah. So it's hard for me to be like, oh, that's a guy that, like, bestows confidence in us. So, I mean, other than that, I mean, I'm pretty positive on him because I think he's made a lot of good decisions outside of that really pull through, I think.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Guys, it's been a good debate. We'll see what happens throughout the next couple of days, what they truly are looking at before we head into the weekend at quarterback. We'll have a show coming later that week. Later this week, excuse me, that'll dive into all that. I have a question to pose you guys about Thanksgiving football. That's really the NFL headline that we should hit on before we finish out here. But first, Corey, let's hear from our sponsors.
All right, guys, it's never a good idea to drink and drive, but what if you had a few beers at the game and you know you're not drunk, but you get pulled over and arrested anyway? You need a law firm that knows how to try DWIs. Someone who won't just plead you out quickly. You need a lawyer who has hundreds of hours of hands-on instruction in a lab learning the sciences used in DWI cases. A lawyer ACS qualified to be designated a lawyer scientist. Because these cases aren't like other kinds of cases, your positive outcomes may very well depend on who better understands and presents the science at trial. Attorney Brian Aysen is a designated lawyer scientist, and the lawyers at Aysen Law Firm have successfully tried and won many of these cases. Call Aysen Law Firm at 832-209-2297. That's Aysen Law Firm at 832-209-2297, or visit DWILawyerHouston.com. It's time to trade in your mask for face masks, load up the hoppers, and go to war with your friends. Too hot? Too rainy? Too cold? Splat Zone has you covered. Literally. It's Splat Zone Indoor Paintball. Round up the family and get to 11260 Hempstead to check out Splat Zone Indoor Paintball today. 11260 Hempstead. Splat Zone Indoor Paintball. Splat Zone is a great, low-impact, family-friendly experience, and if you use their website to make reservations, you can get 5% off by using the code BATTLERedSplat. And also, while I've got everybody here, I want to tell everyone about the Adventure Begins Stadium. It's at 525 Woodland Square Boulevard, Suite 130 in Conroe, Texas. Make sure to go to the Marcel Town Center right there on 1488. The Adventure Begins is family-friendly, super clean, awesome, well-lit. It's not like nerd dungeon people always kind of think about when you think about comic shops or sports places and stuff like that. They're awesome. The staff is knowledgeable. When you're in a certain department, the guys who work that department know what they're talking about. They can help you out. This is where Nico and I buy our nerd stuff from all the time. Nico is always playing his little nerd card games with his buddies up there. I buy my comic books there. And, of course, the Adventure Begins Stadium is where you go to get all of your sports memorabilia and sports cards needs satisfied. This is a place to go to get all your sports memorabilia set up and get it right there from the Adventure Begins Stadium at 525 Woodland Square Boulevard, Suite 130, Conroe, Texas, 77384 at the Marcel Town Center on 1488.
Thanksgiving football. Obviously, we all love to grab a plate of food, pile it high with all the good food whatever your family makes, and sit on the couch and watch game after game of football. And I'm not going all time because obviously I haven't watched every football game that's happened on Thanksgiving.
What?
But I think it's crazy, right? But I think over the last two decades, since 2000, let's go, I think this might be the best top to bottom day of football that we have. At least if you're looking ahead on paper, this might be the best one that we've had in the last couple of decades. Starting out with Bills, Lions. The Lions, I know, not a playoff team by any stretch, at least not right now, but they are on a three-game win streak. They'll be at home against a Bills team that is trying to make a case to be the top team in the AFC. Then you have Giants, Cowboys. The NFC East is surprisingly the best division in football right now. And you have these two teams desperately trying to keep up with the Eagles that are both 7-3 playing. I get that the Giants are riddled with injuries, but they still need this game just as bad as the Cowboys. And then you close out with the Patriots, Vikings. Now the Patriots have had a roller coaster year from their offense, but you're playing Kirk Cousins, primetime Kirk Cousins. We know how bad that can be, versus Bill Belichick and a Vikings team that's trying to potentially vie for a top 1-2 seed in the NFC. They need to keep from sliding and get that win just as badly as the Patriots need that win if they want to try for a playoff spot. And there's all sorts of matchups across all three of these games that's going to be wildly entertaining. These are all really important games for each one of these teams. I think this might be the best of the just top to bottom, all three games. There's no stinkers in there, I don't think, looking at it on paper. I think this might be the best full football day for Thanksgiving in the last couple of decades.
Pretty close. Buffalo-Detroit is probably not that exciting of a matchup. It's pretty obvious. I think Buffalo's probably heavily favored in that game. However, it is fun to watch Buffalo play. They are an explosive offense, and their defense is smothering. And Detroit is one of those teams people want to like. You know, their Hard Knocks last year was really kind of, or this year, was really kind of interesting. It really got people's attention. So I could see, you know, people being excited for this team. And so, I agree, because that's probably the worst of the games, and there's still a lot of television drama to be had with it. Cowboys-Giants, it's an important game for the NFL. It's an important game for the postseason stuff. It's an important game in their division, and it makes it a fun watch nationally, because it's going to be two teams really trying to figure out. It's going to sound a little weird, but I don't think either team knows really who they are identity-wise. Or I think the Giants might feel like they do. I think they know they're Saquon Barkley in defense. But Daniel Jones is really trying to establish, you know, keep in mind that both, I think Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones are eligible for free agency at the end of the year. So Daniel Jones is doing everything he can to prove he belongs on this team too. And then the Cowboys, of course, are a team that are, this is their good year, which means last year was bad, and it means next year is bad. And on their good years, they're good enough to make the playoffs and then lose in the first round. So this is an interesting game for them. This is, you know, the division is hyper competitive. It's not up for grabs. It's gonna be a heavyweight marathon of a dogfight. I just combined a bunch of different stupid sports analogies to win that division, because there are three teams that have 8 wins already, or 7 wins. So, I mean, it's a crowded, complicated division. So this is an important game. And then New England and Minnesota, it's two well-ranked teams as far as wins and losses. I think 6-4 is good enough in that, in New England's division, to be first or second, just off the top of my head. Because I think the Jets are 6-4, and I think Miami's had a few losses also. So And Buffalo's what, 7-3?
Well, Miami's 7-3, and they have Buffalo at 7-3. So
6-4, they can't afford to.
They're just trying for a wild card spot, honestly, well, to stay in play for
and
that.
And they can't afford to lose anymore. Otherwise, they are out of the running. You know, because yeah. they all have games against each other still. One more round of games against each other. So New England can't afford any more losses. And Minnesota, after getting embarrassed last week, they don't want to lose. One little note: the NFL yet again. Just being an absolute hypocrite and a liar. Hey, what do teams do when they win championships in every sport? What do they do in the locker room?
Get rings, throw a parade.
In the locker room, right after the game.
Oh, pop champagne.
Pop champagne and beer, right? Sprayed all over each other, spray the beer, spray the champagne. What do players all talk about doing on the flight home on road games?
Drinking,
having a beer or two. So apparently, I don't know what team it was. I think it was the Vikings. One of their coaches got a DUI coming home from the road
game. No, that was the Titans.
Okay. So the Titans coach got a DUI coming back from the road game. Then because of that, they went back and the Minnesota Vikings had posted this fun footage of Kirk Cousins celebrating wearing the chains for everyone on the team because he like won them the game. He was like the hero of the game. So all his teammates gave him their chains to wear on the flight home. So he's having a good time, but there's some beer bottles in the background. So four players were named, and the Minnesota Vikings had to deal with it internally. Also, on a couple other clips where it's seen that players are drinking on NFL flights or in the locker room, the NFL has reached out and sent out a memo to remind all of the teams that there's no drinking on NFL premises. Or in NFL activities, NFL events, on NFL property, or on NFL flights. Is that just total BS? Or is one of the sponsors not Budweiser? Am I missing something? What's happening here? Are we not reasonable adults?
Yeah, that was kind of a weird double standard. Obviously, I don't know if it's like a response to the Titans thing. I've never heard of players getting fined before.
They didn't publicly out whatever the punishments were. The team handled it internally and then reported to the league what they did, and the league said they were satisfied with that.
Well, I'm looking it up right now. I'm seeing that Bill's player was fined for grabbing a beer and like throwing it in his own face, kind of
like popcorn
the
thing. Yeah.
T.O. popcorn.
Again, first of all, is that not the greatest Budweiser commercial on the planet? Like, how is that? Like, they're doing stuff for your sponsors. Also, you're letting a beer sponsor you. This is some of the worst PR on this side of the FIFA World Cup mess that I've ever seen. I don't understand. Again, we talk about this. By the way, there was another concussion incident. Matthew Stafford. We didn't talk about what had happened because it looked like they were handling it correctly. He got a concussion 3 weeks ago. They held him out of the next game. They put him into the game last weekend, and he got hit again, and it came out again with another concussion. Two concussions in 3 weeks. And immediately his wife issues a statement. His wife saying the NFL's got to do something about this. So, obviously, there's some internal questions about whether or not he was actually cleared to play, like supposed to be cleared to play. So we're still in the, like, nothing has changed, no matter how much they want to complain about it. And now they're worried about players drinking on flights.
All that to say, I think this is the best thing.
The NFL drives me crazy sometimes with what they choose to do importantly. Because you know people are going to be drinking on Thanksgiving, and you know how many beer commercials we're going to see in these three games, and we're going to see Budweiser slapped everywhere. So why are we, or whoever their sponsors, I actually don't know off the top of my head. It might not be Budweiser, in which case, sorry, whoever it is. But my question is, like, my question to you, I suppose, is does this make any sense from, like, a PR leader? You're in media. We're media. Does this make any sense to you?
It's a weird stance to have somebody grabbing like a drink from a fan and p- pouring it on their face in a celebratory thing and getting upset and finding them, I guess. Yeah, I don't know what the thought process would be if they're worried about fans throwing drinks onto the field or something like that. I'm not sure what the concern is, but they do not want players drinking anything on the field. That's
or the flights,
for sure.
The locker rooms. They don't want any players on the practice facility at the stadiums. It's a dumb policy.
Corey's hot. He's got an axe to grind with the NFL. He's hot. Let's give him a lap. Nico, do you think this is the best slate that we've had for Thanksgiving football? I feel like 2012 is maybe the only other contender, and even that had the dud Patriots-Jets game, 49-14. That one was only interesting because the butt fumble happened there. But I feel like this could be one of those where all the games are actually competitive.
Right. I mean, this year has been such a mess and such a fun year to watch because literally nothing makes any sense whatsoever. And it's great. It's fantastic to watch a season like this unfold where everything is terrible and everyone is doing way worse than they should or like nowhere near projections because it means that it's going to keep the things just rolling and interesting. You know, this is the one year where like fourth quarters have mattered the most. Like, there's just a lot of individual stuff that makes it interesting.
During one of the games, I can't remember what broadcast it was, but a broadcaster said that through 10 weeks, there had been 116 games that at one point in the fourth quarter, the teams were within a possession of each other. And that was the first time that had happened in NFL history, that many games. Through 10 weeks being that close or being within a possession in the fourth quarter at any time during the fourth quarter, which is pretty crazy. And that's also, I don't know if that means that it's a bunch of good football or it's sloppy or whatever it means, but that means that teams are always in it, it seems.
Yeah, and that's honestly the best part because, I mean, even if you're not a huge supporter of these teams, at least watching a game be competitive is way more fun than just watching a blowout.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm hoping for Thanksgiving. That's
so you
all
don't
I want.
Have to talk with the family. You could just watch football.
Exactly. That's the dream. It's the American dream.
You know that stat? That stat.
You visit your family and then ignore them.
This is America, and I just want to watch football and shove food in my mouth and not
that
talk
with
really
anyone. That really makes me think about the Chiefs-Chargers game Sunday night, where the Chargers basically won the game with a minute left, and the Chiefs were like, no. All we need is 40 seconds. And went back down the field and re-won the game. Like, that was... Yeah, these fourth quarters have been really important. So... And I don't remember a season being like this, and I guess statistically that bears out. So that is... It is an interesting stat, but it kind of bears just how exciting these games have been down to the wire. Except for that San Francisco Cardinals game. In front of 100,000 people in another country.
Gave Mexico a horrible
The Mexicans
game,
showed up.
Not
at
very,
all. The
not
Mexicans
very neighborly
showed up four
at
hours
all.
Early. The stadium was something like 60% full 4 hours before kickoff. Like.
I can't even imagine. That would have been such
and
a
apparently,
cool game to have.
A lot
been
of the stadium
at.
Was like rolling San Francisco away. Like a lot of the Hispanic community is 49ers fans, apparently. And so they were excited to see him and they were excited to cheer for him. It didn't matter because the Cardinals were just awful, awful. If we get time later this week, we talked about it off air, but I really want to talk about like the other road we might take, which is where if we think Davis Mills is any good and we sign him, what that does to our franchise. And I want to use Kyler Murray as the model because that's the latest young quarterback contract, right? So like Davis Mills, if he's the starter, he's going to ask for something like that, right? He has to.
Oh my gosh! If we get down this road, we're never gonna finish, folks. So
not tonight. Not
let's
tonight.
Get
another,
out of here.
Another episode. I want to. When we don't know what to talk about, that's what we're gonna talk about.
Another night. Another night. All right. We'll let you go on the Kyler Murray
it's
rant
a mess.
At some
he's,
point.
He's ruining.
I promise.
Well, they're a bad franchise anyway. It doesn't really matter.
All right, folks. everyone, I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. We'll be back later this week. We want to make sure that we are previewing the Texans and the Dolphins this Sunday. I hope all of you travel safe. If you are traveling to see family, friends, whoever it may be, enjoy your Thanksgiving. Hopefully you get some time off this weekend to enjoy it, kick back, have some good food, have a beverage of choice, enjoy your Thanksgiving. And from all of us here at Battle Red Radio, happy Thanksgiving, and we will be back later this week. Co-host Corey DLG, producer Nico, and of course myself, Colton Molesky. Thank you for listening, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of Battle Red Radio.